Welcome back to Meet the Professors, and we continue with our program. Why don't we go on to the next case? I want to ask Rich Zelkowitz if he can present.
This is a very healthy 64-year-old lady till the time of her presentation who presented with some cough and shortness of breath, saw her primary care doc, was given the typical Z-Pak at the time, didn't get better, came back and saw her doc, who sent her for an X-ray, which showed a very large left-sided effusion. He then sent her for a CAT scan, which confirmed the presence of a large loculated effusion, mediastinal adenopathy, multiple small pulmonary nodules bilaterally, and probably a lesion in her left breast or in her chest wall. I may add that she also, just prior to that, had had a mammogram, which was reported to be normal. She was referred to the pulmonologist for the thoracentesis. The thoracentesis was done, which revealed a poorly differentiated adenocarcinoma. She was actually referred to one of my partners who does lung cancer with the diagnosis of lung cancer versus unknown primary. He commented on the lesion that likely was in her breast. She underwent a biopsy of the breast lesion. It revealed a poorly differentiated infiltrating duct carcinoma, triple negative, and that's where we stood.
And what was her sort of medical condition at that point?
Prior to that, she was very, very healthy, enjoyed a wonderful quality of life. By the time she saw my partner, she was sick. She was very short of breath.
Any other symptoms of the disease?
None whatsoever.
How short of breath was she?
She was short of breath in that from the time she had her diagnostic thoracentesis into seeing the oncologist, which was a week, she went back and had a second thoracentesis.
Any way to differentiate how much of the shortness of breath was from the fluid as opposed to the parenchymal disease?
I think part of it was from the fluid, but even after thoracentesis, she was short of breath.
Can you talk a little bit more about her lifestyle? Was she working? A little bit more about her personally?
Her husband was retired. They were well set financially. They spent most of their time traveling.
Did she fit the picture of, you know, quote, metastatic crisis or visceral crisis in your mind?
Close. Certainly did.
Vicente, how would you think this one through?
She's triple negative, and so my approach and newly diagnosed metastatic breast cancer, chemotherapy naive, especially since triple negative, is to give them a combination regimen. I know that some people use sequential, but in this particular setting, our group will be more in favor to give them a combination therapy. And is any combination better than the others? There's many combinations today. So a reasonable approach would be to give her FAC or TAC. Or you could. We believe that since the patient is quite symptomatic and has several organs involvement, but before that she was medically sound, we would use a combination regimen.
If you had to guess what that combination would be, what most likely would it be?
I would consider this patient to give her TAC chemotherapy.
What about bevacizumab?
And patients in their first line, that would be also a great option to use in a combination. Since the safety of TAC and bevacizumab is not very well established, giving her TAC or bevacizumab would be very reasonable in this patient. Some people may consider to use paclitaxel and gemcitabine plus bevacizumab by indirect comparison. But I think even weekly paclitaxel, which we commonly use with bevacizumab, would be a very good option in this patient with triple negative breast cancer.
So paclitaxel, bevacizumab, what about throwing in a little capecitabine?
If I was going to throw something to the paclitaxel, I would prefer to give her gemcitabine.
Rowan?
Is the woman African-American or not? No, yeah. I mean, because it's interesting, you know, we showed in JNCI a year ago that African-Americans were really five times more likely to have triple-negative cancers compared to having receptor-positive cancers are half as likely, and overall cancers had 25% fewer cancers. Yeah, I think, I mean, it is interesting where our choices of first-line therapy has changed, and basically, I must admit, for me, San Antonio changed another thing, too, because we had the Taxol-Bevacizumab data before, and we weren't using much of it because we didn't come back to taxane after an adjuvant taxane. It doesn't apply to this case, but we use almost none for that reason. But then we saw that they showed the subgroup analysis where actually it looked like the benefit was surprisingly perhaps even bigger in the 20% that had prior Taxol. And so that moved it from never using it to a competitive first-line therapy for prior Taxol and anthracycline. It has as good a data as anything because you just have weekly Abraxane phase 2, Zolota phase 2. That's as good as anything when you look at that result from a randomized trial, 20% of 680 patients. So that would be a competitive therapy. The other thing before San Antonio, we would have probably treated this patient with carboplatin and taxotere. That's all preclinical data that platinums might be better in the triple negatives. We've had a lot of neoadjuvant. We have a lot of patients presenting with locally advanced tumors. We do neoadjuvant too. Pretty spectacularly unimpressed with AC or taxanes in this triple negatives. I mean, where everybody gets 3 or 4 cycles and then goes to surgery with not much change. So we'd be using carbo and taxotere. Some people would be using carbo and VP16 or platinum and VP16, but I haven't been quite moved in that direction yet. So I think carboplatin or taxotere versus Taxol plus Avastin, and we couldn't give carboplatin and Taxol and Avastin because our chemopharmacy wouldn't let us do that because we couldn't show them toxicity data on that combination.
You know, it's been interesting, Vicente, looking at the evolution of bevacizumab first in colon cancer, where it kind of got picked up right away. Then we had some data in lung cancer, and we're waiting for regulatory bodies to bless that, et cetera. But talking to the lung cancer researchers, they're ready to use it with carbo-taxol. In breast cancer, it's been kind of more of a mixed response. Of course, we have to wait, and Alan was mentioning to me at the break, the reimbursement issues we have to deal with. And again, I'm trying to prepare ourselves for when that gets resolved, assuming it does get resolved. In breast cancer, the response has been a little bit more mixed, Vicente.
I think Rowan is right on target. One of the reasons I think it hasn't been used as much is that we have 20% of the patients that basically moved to use trastuzumab-based therapy. And so we have less patients in the box, and then we have patients that are hormone positive. So, but this is kind of more like for the triple negative breast cancer, which this patient is. But for instance, in our institution, we have been using taxanes for 10 years. So the majority of the patients that we see or they are referred, they have been exposed to taxanes. And while in this trial, it allowed a small number of patients got taxane and they had to have more than, I think, a 1 year disease-free interval. I don't have a full recollection if it was 6 months. So I think the patients that we see, they have been taxane exposed, anthracycline exposed. And that's the reason I don't think it has taken into full blow the use of bevacizumab. And the other thing, like John said earlier, that people want to see some overall survival, even though that's a secondary endpoint on the trial rather than primary endpoint. But in a triple negative, like this patient, the use of paclitaxel and bevacizumab plus minus another drug would be my preference in this patient.
Rowan, can you comment on this issue of the added benefit clinically and also in the face of in a relatively non-toxic treatment?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I think one of the things that was impressive to me about this data, and the more I think about it, is that it becomes a kind of a spectacular result. We're used to pulling out the HER2 overexpressors. Now, this is one study that pulled them out because most of our studies, if it's true, then many of the other protocols, what we think is effective might only be effective in the HER2s who aren't going to get that therapy anymore, because you want to pull the adriamycin patients, the HER2 patients out with adriamycin, for example. So the idea that this had this big effect, 11 versus 6 months, time to progression, in patients who were almost exclusively not HER2 overexpressors is one of the cleanest looks at that population that we have. And so that's a tremendous result. And it just took me a while to kind of think through that issue. I think the taxane seeing the no subgroup analysis, it seems to be a spectacular result suggesting that this Avastin is really making the taxane therapy more effective for some kind of reason. So I think we're going to see a lot more use of that as it gets evolved. Now, I think the other part of it is the toxicity issue, I think, is exactly true. People talk about proteinuria and blood pressure, and that's okay. I mean, and I like to joke about that's what primary care is for. And I think that's overstating a little bit, but I think that's not too far off the mark, I think, in terms of managing the hypertension. But it looked like there was very little bleeding because there's nothing to bleed, and especially in early stage patients. And so I think that it's going to get increasingly used, I'm pretty sure, as people think about it. And the other part that plays into it in the desperate people, the lung people, had nothing. They're going crazy because they got people that might be 12 months median survival, right? And so with breast cancer, you have so many therapies. Clicked off before with Cliff and everything, you have 5 choices. We have 5 choices, so there you would need more compelling reason to add this as your first choice. And then do you want to add a $50,000 a year therapy without data as your second choice? And so that kind of boxed us in for that 6-month period.
If you put aside the economic issue and I'm the patient and I can take a relatively non-toxic therapy and double my time to progression, that sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Alan?
The data for Avastin is with weekly Taxol, but Cliff Huddeston suggested that first line he's basically giving Avastin with any number of chemo drugs. I'm wondering what our speakers think of combining Avastin with other drugs for which there is no published data.
Is that there?
Well, I mean, there is many regimens that they have been used with Avastin and different other diseases. I personally, for this triple negative breast cancer patient, I won't have a problem giving her paclitaxel carboplatin with Avastin. That has been given in other settings, so there is safety on that. But, you know, you could stick with the data, and the data is you can get them weekly Taxol plus Avastin, and it was very well tolerated. I'm impressed, and somebody symptomatic like this patient, that the response rate was substantial, and this is the major gain that we have seen in time to progression and clinical trials that I'm aware and using chemotherapy. I don't think the data with the Taxol carbo versus Taxol was as substantial as it was for the bevacizumab paclitaxel versus paclitaxel alone. So definitely this would be, and the question if you should use, can that be better than using a combination chemotherapy? Well, as you know, that trial was only paclitaxel alone, and you saw that the objective response and was pretty low, lower than you will expect, and that has been one of the issues. That's the data. The data is there, and it was from by the intergroup, and I would strongly be my main choice to try in this patient.
Rowan, at the ASCO meeting, when Eric Reiner did the discussion after Kathy Miller's presentation of the bevacizumab study, he talked about looking for situations where you have at least safety data. So, for example, he talked about the capecitabine trial, which although it didn't meet its endpoint, it did have safety data. There's data with vinorelbine. I believe there's data with Taxotere. There was also a presentation done at the San Antonio meeting on a so-called metronomic combination. Can you talk a little bit about that? That was Hal Burstein.
Yeah, Hal Burstein. I found it difficult to interpret that data. It's interesting. I find it kind of a throwback regimen. As someone who published in 1982, 242 patients on weekly Adriamycin, I just didn't know enough that was metronomic, so I kind of missed the boat there. Right? But I think the concept of metronomic is really a question I've been dealing with over the past quarter of a century, which is high dose, intermittent, or low dose continuous, right? That's where we all came in, you know, and now it's back to continuous exposure. And to me, because it seems like we asked and answered the question, we're coming back again, I need to see empirical data to see that it's better. And I mean, they had phase two data, looked okay, you know, with an unusual regimen that we're not usually using.
So I want to follow up on this case. At that point that you described when you started treating her, exactly when was it? Was the Avastin data out yet?
So she presented shortly after the ASCO meeting, I think it was July, and we were sort of in that void between the Avastin data getting from ASCO to getting to the insurance companies. So we did talk about Avastin, and we proceeded with attempting to get approval for it. In the interim, she was started on Taxotere and Xeloda.
What happened?
So about 6 to 8 weeks later, she seemed to be feeling better, and we had approval. And it was just at that point that I wanted to do a CAT scan to confirm that she was responding. And sure enough, she appeared to be responding. Her effusions were smaller. Her mediastinal adenopathy was smaller. Her nodules appeared to be a little smaller, and she had what the radiologist described was a pulmonary embolism. So she was admitted to the hospital. She was anticoagulated. And I will also say that right before her CAT scan, she had gotten her first dose of Avastin. So she was admitted to the hospital. She was anticoagulated from heparin to Coumadin and whatnot. And then the decision was whether or not to continue the Avastin.
And just to further clarify, how did she tolerate the capecitabine and docetaxel?
She got better, and she felt better.
Side effects, hand, foot, anything?
You know, she's had some hand, foot that's evolved over time, but no major toxicity. She got better. You know, very infrequently used doublets, and so she was sick enough to warrant the doublet, and she got better.
Rowan?
So we got second line Avastin, right, with the side effect that may or may not be related, I guess, is, you know, kind of, but temporarily related anyway.
Well, it's not really second line.
It was added in once we got approved.
She was responding when it was added
right.
in.
The delay was basically waiting for insurance approval.
Okay, yeah. I guess it's a little harder. I'm trying to figure out, would a pulmonary embolus be more likely to bleed, be a bleeding site, and probably you'd have to say yes rather than no, I would think, right? And so I probably would be reluctant to continue the Avastin or would be trying to figure out if somebody has done that before. I just don't know the data, but I would be reluctant unless I saw some data that somebody had done it before and said it was kind of okay.
Vicente?
Well, the patient is getting better, though, and it's tolerating what you're giving her, and you know, I will be inclined to give it in the beginning, but now that she's getting cycles and she's getting better and you just got the Avastin, so the benefit was of the combination, it would be hard to defend that, you know, she has thrombosis and you're going to use anticoagulation. What would be the safety in that setting? And somebody is improving with what you were giving them before. So clinically, I would just do what you were doing before. I'm not sure if it has any relationship, but you have put that into the mix. So I will keep it then and what is working.
Well,
he was going to give them a low molecular heparin. That's what you were...
No. I treated with Coumadin. We've just monitored her PT closely. That's all. It's not been a problem.